All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our NFL podcast for Tuesday, November something or other, because I can't see the date.
Something the 22nd, my friend. The 20, or 1st, I should say. There,
21st.
Yeah, we're on page.
Already starting off on a good note. DFSR.com is our site, DFSR.com/NBA. We'll get you a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab. It's optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings, NBA, NFL, while the season's still going on. MLB, when that comes back around, all set to go under one subscription package, dfsr.com/NBA, free for 3 days, $34.95 after that, and you're all good to go. Buddy, we are done with week 11. We're heading into Thanksgiving week. A couple quick podcasting notes. We will be doing today's recap episode of week 11. Then tomorrow, we will be doing a Thanksgiving football episode where we'll just talk about the we'll do a game-by-game breakdown of the three games for Turkey Day, because that is a pretty, I mean, it's probably the most high profile NFL, just, I don't know, single day of the year, probably just because it's Thanksgiving. And then we'll come back again Friday and do a game by game breakdown for the rest of the main slate. So a little change in how we usually do things around here, but we think it's works out a little bit better with the Thanksgiving games. All right. So week 11 in the books, pretty interesting week, all things considered. Wasn't like so crazy in terms of just implied usage and just, and there were some outlier performances for sure. But it wasn't like 2 weeks ago where all of the things that we thought we knew just seemed to fall on their face and get buried into the ground and then never to be seen again. So we can talk a little bit about what some of those things were, maybe where we were correct and where we were incorrect on things. But you have a general overview of the week before I get into some of this injury stuff. Like how did you think the week 11 played out for you?
Well, my general overview of the week is if I had just listened to all the things I said on the podcast instead of adjusting everything for the various updates we did over the weekend, then I would be a lot better off right now than I am at this moment.
Like what? Because,
well, like Kareem Hunt comes to mind. Kareem Hunt was a guy I just went probably a little bit overboard, honestly, in my criticism of him and the Kansas City running game and kind of like what he's been after week three, basically, which has been something like a $7,000 running back. And we paid $8,600 for him against the Giants. And, you know, I think we wind up landing there for a number of reasons. It was difficult to spend up. It was also becoming obvious that it was kind of industry consensus and that would be kind of a safe chalkish sort of play. It just turned out that I didn't enter a lot of, I would have completely faded him in big tournaments, for instance. I just didn't wind up having the time to put those lineups in for family reasons. So just feeling irritated about stuff like that. Another guy, well, there were a couple of guys that we liked that just didn't wind up making the final lineup. Like Jarvis Landry was a guy we talked about all week, is a great play. Vegas comes out and just has Devontae Parker with the higher prop and he's 600 less. So we leaned in that direction. Keenan Allen was another guy that I talked about on the podcast. And had I put in more big tournament lineups, he's a guy I said I was going to target in a bunch of big tournaments. He goes off, has the second highest total of any wide receiver on the week. So yeah, just little stuff like that. I kind of get stuck in my craw because we only get a few shots at football every year. And it's annoying when you have a bunch of good ideas, but don't make any money off them.
Yeah, those a couple of those guys were ones I was going to mention coming up here. You know, Landry was a guy that came in, I think, in our second overall lineup. Like, you know, I've been taking more to the season of playing just more like a spread out of cash lineups just because some of the variance around touchdowns is so high. We'll break down some of those performances. But yeah, overall, I think that most of our assumptions were correct in terms of just like usage and things like that, with a couple of weird things. The Kareem Hunt thing ended up not being a huge deal, all things considered, only because he was like 90% starting cash games. Like, it wasn't that.
Oh, but it does wind up being a big deal if you can be the one who fades him, right?
Like
if you're the one more site, even in cash games, I'm saying, like, it wind up, you don't get killed by it, but when it's a big opportunity cost to be on the right side of a 90% fade. You know what I mean? Like, if you have the right idea and you manage to get away from a bad play that everyone else is going to make, that's actually where you can make a lot of money. Now, it's very risky and it's very unusual that it's correct. And I'm not even persuaded that it was correct not to play him necessarily. It's just, you know, one of those things.
Yeah, I like them. The Kansas City just didn't look very good in general. It was specifically Alex Smith. It wasn't like they weren't giving him the ball. Alex Smith looked horrible. I don't know if it was the wind issue or just some just basic passing issues, but outside of passing to Kelsey, he just looked, the decision making was bad. They just couldn't sustain any drives. Anyway, all right, let's go through some of the injury news notes, because there are some things that kind of came out of this week that probably will affect things going forward. The first one is Chris Thompson got hurt. I'm getting confused about the injuries here. Someone tore his Achilles. It wasn't him. He's hurt and he's done for the season.
Someone tore Chris Thompson's Achilles?
No, maybe it was
Dante. That's assault, bro.
It was Dante Foreman. So Thompson gets hurt. Rob Kelly is already out. They are have their Samaje Perine is like basically the only running back left on this, that the only running back that's really played at all left on the Redskins roster. Do you think that he is in line going into this week for heavy volume? He touched the ball a lot last week, like something like 24 touches. Thompson did not go down right away in the game. He scored a touchdown before getting hurt. Do you think Perine ends up becoming, I don't know, just kind of make a default play just because the Redskins are just don't have any running backs anymore?
Perhaps, but he's not cheap. Like, you have to pay $7,200 for him on FanDuel, which is a lot to pay for a guy who, you know, in the limited carries he has gotten this season, has completely sucked. I mean, he had a game against the Redskins, 21 carries, 67 yards. Oakland in the next week, 19 carries, 49 yards. I mean, he was pretty effective against New Orleans, and obviously a high-scoring, pretty fast-paced game, but I don't think it's a lock just to, like, plug him in at 72 and just figure you got there against the Giants.
Yeah, that's a Thursday, so we'll break that down a little bit more tomorrow, but that is that's a pretty significant injury news and note, just because Thompson had a lot of use in the passing game. He did have some use in the running game. I thought he was going to see a ton of touches last week. I actually think he was still in line for it before getting hurt, and like I said, he did catch the touchdown pass before going down. Another piece of news that's probably pretty relevant here, Robert Woods, who had really come out and become Jared Goff's main target, specifically over the last 3 to 4 weeks, and he was finishing off a pretty good game on Sunday, and then he's going to be out with a shoulder issue now. That's a lot of targets out of that Rams offense.
Sure
is. He had 11 targets before he went down, and I think he was touching up against double digits the weeks before as well. What do you think this does to the Rams passing attack? I mean, Goff has looked serviceable, and Woods had been looking real good over the last couple of weeks, and now all of a sudden that's a lot of targets vacated just for that receiving corps.
Yeah, I mean, Cooper Kupp is a guy that people have keyed in on earlier this season, someone who's been seeing a reasonable amount of targets that sometimes our system wants to flirt with a little bit. Like when he's, you know, consistently averaging 7 targets a game like he has for the last 4 games, our system kind of starts going like, I don't know, 5,400, that's not so much money, you know. And so if you're taking 11, 10 targets off the table and he's, you know, I think he stands to get 2 or 3 of those, right? And at 5,400, I think he moves in as being something like a chalk play on Sunday.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where that
New Orleans too. I mean, good secondary, but still a lot of points, a lot of possessions.
Yeah, the secondary is good. Lattimore got hurt. I got to check his injury status. So that's going to affect some of their just defensive coverage, because he got hurt midway through the game, and that did open up some stuff for Cousins as well. So he had been rated, I think, the top rated quarterback in all football for the season before he went down on Sunday. So yeah, that's going to be an interesting spot. We're going to have to spread out the targets. I started doing that. You know, I think there's going to be some people are going to want to play Sammy Watkins. He just doesn't look very good. I think Kupp probably is the main guy. Higbee could see a few more targets. I think he's just
about Michael Thomas on the Rams. Did you know the Rams have a guy named Michael Thomas who caught a ball last week?
Oh, do they? Because
they're up against the Saints this week.
That's a constant problem, because when you do name matching, I mean, now we do ID matching, but early on when we were doing this, we would do more name matching before everything became consolidated, and that was a constant issue with this Mike Thomas, the Mike Thomas of the world. I think there's another Mike Thomas that plays defense too.
Yeah, so wouldn't shock me.
When you have Mike Thomas, Michael Thomas, and another Mike Thomas, Brandon Marshall was always an issue like this.
There's 4 guys in the NFL named Chris Thompson too, by the way. So
no reason for people to care.
Let's
about
just keep
that.
Talking data. This is the data problems podcast with Doug and James. What about tildes over guys and names, Doug? What do you think of that?
I mentioned it before too. The other piece of injury news that I think is going to be relevant here is Deontay Foreman tore his Achilles, and he's going to be out for this season. He had been cutting in some to Lamar Miller's overall carries this season. Lamar Miller, I mean, hasn't been all that good, but part of that is because they've run Foreman a little bit more and have just avoided just giving Miller the full workload. Do you think the Foreman injury? Do you think those are translated like directly to a guy like maybe say Alfred Blue, who's been around the team for a while, or do you think Miller just starts to see even more of these touches? They've wanted to run the ball a little bit more, having Savage at quarterback, which makes sense. I mean, do you think this kind of just all goes to Miller here, or do you think they just kind of break it up between him and Blue, and Miller's kind of still kind of not necessarily in play as he has not been for the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, I don't think it all goes to Miller necessarily. I mean, we've seen both the Texans and the Dolphins now have a reluctancy to just make Miller the guy, mid-20s carries plus per game. He did get 26 touches in the game against Arizona, so you know, I guess we can consider that the upside, but it's hard to imagine it going much north of that. And you know, looking at his usage in prior weeks, it doesn't seem to me that they're like no one in their front office like chomping at the bit to figure out how they can get Lamar Miller more touches per game. So while it's reasonable and Miller's pretty cheap, I don't think you need to prioritize him. I mean, thankfully it's on the Monday slate this week. So, you know, it won't be a part of a main slate and we can kind of get a week to get a sense of their plans, but he is cheap if you play into that Sunday, Monday slate.
Let's take a look at some of the performances that stood out to you or just stood out overall from week 11. Quarterback was Breeze was a guy that we really did like going in. I was just surprised by his ownership. His ownership was really low. I mean, Brady ended up being a complete chalk play, so maybe that was it. Like, they were priced somewhat in the same range. And the fact that so many Brady was something like a 70% start in cash games, I think, on FanDuel. Sure. I think it was slightly lower on DraftKings. But I was still kind of surprised about the Breeze overall ownership just because of the pace of the game. Do you think people were affected by, because what we said on the podcast last week actually played out exactly, was if he was able to pass more, and it really looked like this would be the week that he could pass more than he had been in the past, that he would really stand to outstrip his salaries. Do you think people were just spooked? Do you think people just loved Brady so much? Do you think people were spooked by the recent performance on Breeze? I thought his ownership was really low considering what I thought was a pretty plus match.
Yeah, well, what happens, we've noticed a lot in these cash game lineups especially, is that when the Vegas props come out, there tends to be a lot of consolidation around certain guys in certain price ranges. So before people were accessing the Vegas prop data as readily as they are now, you would see some spread among guys in a similar price range. But these days, doesn't it seem like people just pick a winner? And so since Brady and Breeze were in the similar price range, it just seemed like everyone looked at their lineups and was like, "Eh, it's 50 more yards in the prop or whatever, or was it 25 more yards in the prop, and yeah, we'll just play Brady and save up the 500 elsewhere." I mean, there was a lot of fungibility around mid-range wide receivers too, so it was pretty easy to say go down to Devontae Parker, go down to Jameson Crowder, and it was also very tough simultaneously to pay up this week. So I think that's why you saw a lot of ownership around Brady.
Yeah, I mean, Brady landed in like something like 60% of my cash game lineups. So it was split between him and Breeze. Then those two plays worked out just fine. Brady made up for most of the ownerships. I'm not sure how much people use player props. I mean, we use them to sort of settle coin flip decisions. Or if we think that there's some guy that we're wildly off on, right? Like that we just don't need, that we're not seeing it. And we've gone back and forth about whether this is a correct process. You know, we talked about it even on Sunday, was to say whether or not this, you know, having all these inputs correct that we think are correct, and then waiting on Vegas props to come out to move things up or down. I'm still not totally sold that that's the way to go.
It's the way to go necessarily, but I'm utterly convinced that that's what moves the industry needle, because it's never on the opposite side. Like, I can't think of a single time this season where we had a guy or were against a guy that like Vegas loved one guy over the other, basically, and that the guy who Vegas didn't love was the chalk play. That's not happened a single time this season.
Well, I don't know about that, because Michael Thomas had the highest player prop wide receiver, and nobody played him at all in cash games. Like, so Michael Thomas had the highest overall yards receiving, whatever that, I'm getting mixed up, but he had the highest yards player prop for any wide receiver, and he was something like a 6% start in cash games.
Was the guy that in the same price range that had a worse prop that people did play?
I just don't think anyone played anyone in that.
That's my point. Is that when two guys are close, the guy that Vegas prefers is always the chalk guy. And so sometimes people might say the correct lineup construction isn't to play Michael, or isn't to play a $8,600 wide receiver. Like, I can certainly be convinced of that. And the fact that 66% played Brady and 68% played Kareem Hunt, you know, leads me to believe that not a lot of people had the extra 86 to just spray off on yet another expensive guy. They probably kind of middle out wide receiver, paid up a tight end or whatever. But I think that's more what was going on there. But I mean, if you just look up and down at the chalk plays this week, it's a who's who of who the Vegas props liked. I mean, Jameson Crowder, Parker, Brady, Hunt, Gordon. These were all Vegas prop favorites this week.
Yeah, it makes sense. It's one of those things that's very difficult to evaluate, because obviously we've talked in the past about how Vegas's goals are different than our goals. And, you know, some people, I mean, I know for a fact that some people model strictly on player props. We specifically do not. We just, again, we use this simply to double check that we haven't missed something that stands out like it's crazy, that an input might be incorrect in our system, or just to kind of get a feel of just what the industry is going to do. I think it's good in that sense. I do not think it's good in just tying your entire projection. Well, you just can't tie an entire projection system to it because there's so many players that don't have player props.
Oh, so there's not even props for most of the guys.
Right, exactly. NFL. Like, you know, guys like, you know, Marvin Jones didn't even have a prop this week. You know, got players like this, like that are, we're not even talking about wide receiver threes or fours, you know, guys that are wide receiver ones or twos on teams. Just that Vegas will not put out a prop if there's any indecisiveness, just about maybe some conditions. They're not going to do it unless they're pretty sure about everything lining up for the player. So I'm not sure you can do it. I'm not sure you can just go writ large over the whole entire thing and model it strictly on that. But like we said, we do use it from time to time, or at least on Sundays, to just kind of to settle something in the middle.
It's a worthwhile sanity check for sure. And it's also worthwhile just to double check and see if you're going to be for or against the chalk, just in terms of, say you love a guy, or like I talked about with Kareem Hunt earlier, if you're off a guy who you think is going to be chalk, then you can say to yourself, well, this is a really great opportunity to get separation, maybe in big tournaments where people are going to still, you know, he might not be a 68% start, but say he's a 40% start or whatever in the Sunday million. If he's bad, like that really increases your equity across your other, you know, big tournament positions. And at that point, that's a good way to hedge against, you know, say you just decide, well, I don't really love this guy, but I want to play him in cash games. That's a great way to kind of hedge against that. And I kind of still get some value while not deciding to just stick your neck out and you know, go against a huge favorite in the cash
game. For sure. Some other performances this week. Do you think LeSean McCoy looks around and is like, well, I've done everything I can do. What's going on with the rest of this freaking team? Like, Peterman comes in. McCoy had 13 carries, 114 yards, and a touchdown. He did his classic, like, LeSean. You can always tell LeSean McCoy is about to do something when he gets the ball and he just starts carrying it in one hand, because he's like, man, there's no one's going to touch me here. Like, no other running back in football will just run out with, like, run like you used to do in backyard football, like, run with the ball out in front of you, like, just not even worry about these huge guys barreling down and getting a fumble, or whatever. And he did that at least twice, where he took a pitch and was just like, well, I'm off to the races. He goes 13 carries, 114 yards and a touchdown, also adds a receiving touchdown. And meanwhile, the rest of Peterman threw, I think, something like, he threw five picks in the first half. They were losing by 40 at halftime. This game seems like an outlier game. At the same time, he also seems like the only good player on the team. What are your thoughts when you see running back performances like this for guys from just totally garbage teams?
Yeah, I mean, I think you take them with a grain of salt. We see what the usage is on McCoy now, just because Buffalo is so bad. So 13, 8, and 12 carries in each of the 3 weeks. You are not going to play 8,300 for a guy who touches the ball 14 times a game from the running back position anyway. So unfortunately, I think it kind of becomes meaningless. You know, I think he would be interesting at 7,000, but I'm certainly not going to pay up for a guy in that price range who isn't going to touch the ball 15 times a game.
Yeah, there were guys that got a lot of carries this week that didn't turn them into a whole lot. Like Fournette carried the ball 28 times, only 111 yards. He really had trouble getting stuff going, though. The ankle did look okay. He was able to break at least one long run where he looked completely fine. And then, like we said, P. Ryan had 23 carries. There was guys that had 20 or more carries. There was actually three guys, Mixon, Collins, and Tevin Coleman. Those guys each had 20 carries and could not muster more than 50 yards running. Do you think this is, we're starting to see this more as well, which is these guys, like, it just seems like it's increasingly difficult to just run the ball in the NFL. I mean, I don't think I'm saying anything completely new here, but it just seems like running the ball kind of seems impossible. Like, like so many guys get carries and just almost sure. No one does anything with them.
Yeah, I mean, well, I think part of it is there's just the difference between the haves and the have-nots in terms of running backs, in terms of running games, is pretty stark right now. I mean, there are still teams that are capable of running the ball. And I think teams are also just not investing as much in developing a running attack because passing is just kind of shown on a per-play basis to be more efficient. And I also think just at this point in the season, you know, there have been studies done that have shown the thing most likely to make you a good running back later in the season is just having fresh legs. Like, you know, when Willie Parker comes in for Jerome Bettis, timely example, he can go in and kind of take off, and he's just like a step faster than everyone else because he just hasn't gotten his brains kicked in for the whole season. So it's no surprise to me that guys like Fournette might be slowing down, particularly moving into an NFL workload. He's never played this many games in a season before. It's no surprise to me that even guys like Jordan Howard, that his workload might be reduced, and some guys will continue to fight through it. I mean, Kareem Hunt's another example of a guy who really seems to be wearing down. So yeah, it doesn't surprise me whatsoever. I think it's worth noting. I think it's, you know, as we looked at the running back props last week, it was noteworthy just how low the highest overall total was. I think Hunt was the highest at, what was it, like 87 yards or 77 yards? It was not very many yards. So I think 80. Be cautious, try to take your running backs in good game scripts, I think, more even so than good situations. And I think you got to just kind of understand that you're taking on some risk the more money you invest at the running back position.
Yeah, and some of the best running teams in football just are complete committees. Like Jacksonville's I'm just saying for the most yards. Jacksonville has the most yards this season, but then Philly's number two. Philly, they give the ball to everybody. They're just keeping sort of everybody fresh. New Orleans is kind of in a timeshare. Dallas has Zeke, so it's elite. And then, you know, Chicago's elite. And then Houston's been in a timeshare. Carolina's been in a timeshare. Minnesota's in a timeshare. So there's a lot of these top yards teams are just content to just give one guy the ball 14 times and another guy 7 times or something like that during a game. Or if you're Minnesota, give them like 14 and 14 and just run the ball the entire time. So I think that's the other difficult thing sometimes with running backs is the teams that are some of these teams that are content to give their guys the ball a lot. I mean, just kind of stink. Like the Darkwoods of the world, Joe Mixon is obviously horrible. Alex Collins isn't all that good. Sure. So just some of these teams, even when they are content to do it, they just simply cannot run the ball themselves. So anything else stand out to you, some performances from this week that kind of caught your eye or anything that like frustrated you, anything else that we need to kind of discuss here?
Yeah, you've touched on some of the stuff that I was looking at. I mean, on a high level, running back as a whole was down overall. In terms of the good and predictable performances, we saw Ingram go out there and have 134 yards, although on just 14 touches. So I think you want to be cautious in kind of projecting that usage going forward. It does seem like he and Kamara are in something of a timeshare there. So, you know, I wouldn't trust it necessarily. Howard was good, but again, on not so many touches. I did win my own personal internal no halftime challenge, though, picking Howard over Kareem Hunt. So I'd like to go ahead and pat myself on the back one last time for that before we go on down this list. After that, you saw, Latavius Murray wound up having a nice game for Minnesota. I don't know, again, how much you can trust about that, given the timeshare nature. It might be better to be lucky than good if you're trying to pick Minnesota running backs. I am curious to know your thoughts on Alfred Morris. I mean, he didn't put up a flashy fantasy total, but he did get 17 carries this week. Do you think Alfred Morris is a guy we can keep an eye on going forward?
I do, just because they've said that he's basically going to be the guy. This is something we'll talk about on the Thanksgiving Day podcast tomorrow, but it's pretty clear that he's just going to be their guy. Like, they've never brought McFadden in. They really don't want to run Smith. I do think he's just not very good. This is the problem. Like, they had a totally elite guy in Zeke, and then they're bringing in a guy that they never wanted to touch the ball, and that's Morris. And I think that's really what it is. But the fact that he had
5.5 yards of carry here, it's not like he played badly in this game.
No. I agree. No, I think he's good. I think we're going to talk about him tomorrow as probably likely a play. It's just mostly that, I don't know. They're pretty unexciting. One thing actually that's interesting going into this week is this, and this is specifically for running backs, is we try to typically target running backs, at least for cash games, that are first their favorites and then secondly their home favorites. That really just kind of, it's that little chicken the egg, because home teams are typically the favorites in some fashion, but we're looking for bigger line home favorites. This week has a ton of those. There's something like 7 or 8 games right now that opened at lines of 7 or more. So this could be an interesting running back week coming in. I haven't seen lines this high kind of across the board. And even for some bad teams, Cincinnati -8, KC's -10, Philadelphia -13.5. We have a -17 for New England, which is they're playing Miami. It's awesome. The Falcons are -10. And then there's a couple other ones. Yeah, Pittsburgh -14, Baltimore -7. There's a lot of really high lines with running backs that I think we could consider. And again, I think this has been it's just been a very difficult thing trying to figure out what teams, one, are going to do outside of the top tier of running backs, what they're going to do in terms of who they're going to give the ball to. And then two, kind of trusting that you can pay some of the prices on these running backs, because a lot of these guys just don't get there, man. We've had a lot of weeks with chalky, high price running backs just not completely living up to what we thought they were going to do.
Yeah, that's fair. Let's move over to wide receiver real quick. So wide receiver was kind of weird. I mean, we saw Kenny Stills go off for one of the bigger weeks with 180 yards receiving. It was on 8 targets. He kind of got a lot of the share that people thought Devontae Parker was going to get. Do you think we can trust that, you know, because Kenny Stills has been sort of a GPP darling all season long, flashing upside at various times and then kind of disappearing at others. What do you think the real Stills is going forward? Because he's very cheap here coming in against New England, who's really struggled against the pass this season.
It's hard to know because for a couple reasons. One, they had a quarterback change midway through the game because Cutler got hurt. He's in the concussion protocol, so Matt Moore threw some of the balls. I mean, Stills was still the third highest targeted guy on the team. Parker still out-targeted him. Parker had 9 targets. Landry, who we really liked, had 11 targets. So it wasn't like, you know, by a percentage target share, he was still third on the team. It was close. And the difference in price between the 8 targets to 9 targets from him and Parker is worth something. I still would trust Parker, I think, going forward, just because it's just more of a known commodity, though. Stills, has flashed upside. He's had weeks for sure where he's been able to put, he's been able to put pretty good numbers.
Targets in his last 5 weeks. You ready? 8, 8, 4, 10, 9. That's pretty damn good for a guy's 5,600.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I wish the quarterback was better, but no, yeah, it's hard to argue with it. I think I still probably would trust. Oh, well, no, but you got to remember some of those. Now I remember some of those games Parker was out though. Like so, so I think that's gonna affect. That does affect some of those numbers. I think Parker sat for two of those weeks. Any other wide receiver? You know, you mentioned Keenan Allen was a guy that we kind of liked going in. He blew it out of the box. I mean, there were times where we were targeting Keenan Allen, had Keenan Allen's targets well into the double digits, or at least like 10, 9.5, 10, maybe even pushing up a little higher early in the season. We saw a dip on some bad matchups and just kind of going away from him. Are we comfortable going back to double digit targets for a guy like Allen?
Yeah, it's extra sad too, because even in that last week's podcast, I was like, I probably won't play Keenan Allen this week because the matchup isn't very good, but he's a guy where if the targets are there, we definitely target him going forward. And now we get to do the old classic. I mean, thankfully it's at least enshrined in podcast history, because now we get to do the old classic. Oh, look at us. We like a guy who just came off scoring 28 fantasy points. Aren't we so smart? But I will like to point out that we were so smart last week as well. It's just, you know, got kind of unlucky with the bad matchup, because all the signs have been there for Keenan Allen. I mean, we've kind of like had this random love affair with Keenan Allen all season long, and I don't think a lot of that's changed now. So yeah, I think Keenan Allen continues to be a good play, and unfortunately everyone's going to be on him now instead of just us.
I set him at 10 targets going into this week. I think it's probably correct. I think that's like what their overall plan is to do on a week-to-week basis. And but by the way, a lot of these 13 targets, basically, like, they came mostly in the first half. Like, they barely played the second half. So this was, I think there's a game script where he, because we've seen this from him in the past, where Philip Rivers wants to target him a lot, but he's had, you know, he had something like three of his last 5 weeks prior to this one were against elite cover corners. And so that had kind of eaten into his target share and then just kind of dipped our overall numbers. Other guys, like, you know, we talked a little bit about Larry Fitzgerald going into last week, but were we worried about the quarterback play? Yeah. He saw 10 targets, converted 9 for 90 and a touchdown. Are we, man, it's so funny just to listen to announcers. Announcers just crawl over themselves to compliment Larry Fitzgerald. It is worth it,
but
it's kind of embarrassing at times, like what they do with Aaron Rodgers at times. But do we want to set Fitzgerald back up to where, you know, Carson Palmer like levels of quarterback play in terms of what we can expect for his performance to be going forward?
Well, we've seen another, and I think this is a really interesting case study and something we can continue to learn and continue to kind of level up our DFS game going forward, because we've seen a number of examples this season of quarterbacks going down and then possession receivers stepping in and maintaining or even increasing their production. Looking at Davante Adams, Adam Thielen, Larry Fitzgerald now too, Jarvis Landry. It turns out that these guys that catch the short routes, like, even these backup, generally pretty terrible quarterbacks, they can just throw the ball 8 yards accurately into someone's hands, right? It's like running the more complicated routes in a double coverage downfield. It looks to be a bit trickier. So, yeah, I think Fitzgerald is absolutely, you know, maintains his status as a good play, kind of quarterback independent at this point. I mean, how many quarterbacks do they even have left, I guess, if the guys they have now get hurt? It's not totally clear to me. But, yeah, I really like him. Adams was another guy I was going to bring up for exactly the same reason. He goes out there and gets 8 receptions on 10 targets for 126 yards. So I think there's this emerging class. If you look at the big wide receiver performances this week, you don't see a lot of these downfield ball hogs. You know, like, I mean, Kenny Stills, I guess, kind of profiles that way if he gets there. But then Allen, Davante Adams, Adam Thielen, Jarvis Landry, all these guys are just kind of ball catchers over the middle that Larry Fitzgerald, they kind of try to tack on a few extra yards after the catch. But Robert Woods is the same way. It's kind of a new emerging trend in the NFL that I think people would do well to keep a very close eye on.
Yeah, Michael Thomas fits that too. He's primarily a slot receiver. Like, so these guys that line up on the inside and the possession guys, Crabtree as well. That's a great call. The guys that are standing out there are going to get the targets on a week-to-week basis as teams maybe
abandon the run a little
bit. Yeah, abandon the run a little bit more and want to just use some of that de facto, make that the de facto run game by just throwing these quick outs. You're right. And it's really interesting, actually, what you said about some of these guys being completely quarterback independent, because Thielen was good. Bradford, Keenum, it kind of hasn't mattered. You know, Fitzgerald's on his third quarterback now between Stanton, Gabbert, and Palmer, and the performance overall for the season. The move to Gabbert seems like it did definitely help Fitzgerald here, but overall in the season, his season numbers, yeah, just look pretty good. All right, we're going to get out of here. DFSR.com/NBA. We'll be back again tomorrow discussing the Thanksgiving Day games, and then back again Friday doing a game-by-game breakdown. I was going to say talk to you soon, but I'll just talk to you tomorrow when we talk Turkey Day games.
I'll talk to you on Turkey Day.